This is the TTY Dialer, episode 32 for the week of June 5th through June 10th. Hi there, welcome to your weekly companion to WRVO's old-time radio show tuned to yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Now every night of the week on the air, we bring you comedy, mystery, drama, sci-fi, westerns, romance, and more from the golden age of radio. It's on from 10 to midnight, and online as well, where we stream it live at WRVO.org. This podcast brings you a blend of radio history, fun with sound from the past, and a look at the shows coming up for the week on Tune to Yesterday.
At this particular moment, Harry Von Zell, our Sokoni Minuteman, has a few words of wisdom for you.
The other day, a man asked, why do Sokoni dealers clean both windshield and rear window? Well, now there's a good reason. Because nowadays, your rear view mirror is inside the car. It's almost as important to have clean glass behind you as in front of you. It might prevent an accident. Sokoni dealers are famous for their extra services, but none of these services is meant to impress you. Some are for your safety, others for your comfort. And we believe motorists appreciate this friendly interest in their car, as well as the fine products Sokoni sells. And wherever you see the sign of the Flying Red Horse, it means friendly service. But my minute's up. Sokoni thanks you for listening.
Yes, at the time when rear-view mirrors were relatively new, the year was 1935, that was a commercial for the Sokoni Sketchbook Show. It was a program of music by Johnny Green and storytelling, readings, and musings from Christopher Morley. Sokoni was actually an acronym for the Standard Oil Company of New York, which at the time provided gas and oil for cars and vacuums, and today is in the same business as Mobil Gas. Previously, another show with a very similar title was on the air called Sokoni Land Sketches, and it had a Lum and Abner-like pair on the air acting out situations from a small New Hampshire town, which wrapped up in 1934. In the summer of 1935, the Sokoni Sketchbook Show hit the air Friday evenings at 8 on the East Coast. And after that show ended, Sokoni Oil would hold on to that time slot on CBS with the reinvented Flying Red Horse Tavern music and variety show through 1936. And that iconic image from way back when is still seen at gas stations today, the Red Pegasus, or the Winged Horse. But what we don't see too much of today, which was a big part of their business back in the 1930s, is ads for vacuum oil. Coming up this Monday night on Tune to Yesterday, live on the air, we have an hour of comedy with episodes of Fibber McGee and Molly and The Jack Benny Show. Then it's an hour of true history with a couple of shows that you don't want to miss if you're a fan of any reality programming. From 1941, we have I Want to Come Back. Then one of the first on-air police ride-alongs that was for real, called Night Watch.
Control 1-5, 6-10-4. Did you receive description of escaped mental patient?
5-6-10-4, we have it.
Right now, you're in the back seat of a detective unit, number 5-6. That was Sergeant Ron Perkins reporting in service on the night watch. Jotting down the description of that escaped mental patient. We'll probably be working on that later. But while you're with us tonight, remember, the people you hear are not actors. This is it. This is real. This is Night Watch.
This Tuesday night at 10 o'clock, it's drama from the NBC University Theater, bringing us an adaptation of This Side of Paradise. Then 60 Minutes of Crime, we'll hear broadcasts of The Screen Director's Playhouse and Dragnet. You can hear these shows live on the air on WRVO if you're in central and northern New York, or live online, streaming at WRVO.org Monday, June 5th and Tuesday, June 6th from 10 to midnight. And as a reminder, this does mark the first of a three-month genre change. So, comedy and true history not heard on Monday nights for the last 3 months, but they will be for the next, and so forth. I'll be telling you more about the schedule in this Dialer podcast as it goes on. And if it wasn't for dog trainer Rudd Weatherwax and the writing of Hobart Donovan, the public may have never known about the wonder dog Lassie, or its program that made its radio debut this Thursday, June 8th in 1947. It followed the adventures of the collie dog as he helped out kids or got to the bottom of a mystery and barked on command when the script called for it, with cues from Lassie's owner and trainer. Rudd Weatherwax would urge the real collie dog to bark or growl at just the right moment, And if you missed the signal during the live show, dog impersonator Earl Keen would fill in with a bark. Now, the show, which starred Lassie, really treated him as a real actor in different scenarios, casting him under different names for the different plays, like Skipper, Nipper, Jumpy, or even his given name from Weatherwax of Pal. Leading up to the radio show, Lassie was already pretty well known across the country, as he starred in a series of MGM movies. And he was so popular, in fact, that the collie population in the U.S. in the 1940s shot up from 3,000 to 19,000, as kids and fans wanted their own Lassie at their feet. In his film debut, 1943's Lassie Come Home, he was hired on by the studio for $250 a week, while his co-star, Elizabeth Taylor, received only $100 a week. There was a time when the Wonder Dog was a real phenomenon, and it led to Lassie's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and the radio show for 3 years on ABC and NBC, not to mention the memorable TV series that was on from 1954 through 1969, seen in prime time for most of that run. Here's some sound now from the 1949 season of The Lassie Show.
Lassie, the world's most famous dog, and Red Heart, America's favorite dog food, team up for The Lassie Show. From Hollywood, it's The Lassie Show, transcribed by John Morell and Company, makers of three-flavor Red Heart. And here is Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's lovable motion picture star, Lassie, in person. Lassie is fed Red Heart exclusively, and Lassie's vigorous bark, strong body, and fine glossy coat are positive proof that Red Heart helps keep dogs healthy and happy. Lassie speaks for Red Heart. All three wonderful flavors. And now to introduce our story, here's Lassie's owner and trainer, Rudd Weatherwax.
Thank you, Charlie. And hello, everyone. Today, Lassie plays a part of a mutt, a sweet, friendly mutt named Mike, in a story entitled Reprieve. Our story began one November evening in the walk-up tenement flat of Molly O'Malley and her two young sons, on the east side of one of the world's great cities.
I'm hungry. Can we eat now, my head, can we?
Well, no sense in waiting. Timmy will be along. Oh, answer that Stevie lad.
Yeah?
I'm looking for a boy and a dog. A little kid, wears brown corduroy breeches and a blue sweater. Black and white dog.
Yeah? What makes you think he's here?
Well, people say he lives here.
No, then, what's all this?
It's nothing, Ma. This guy's looking for a kid and a dog.
What for do you want the kid, mister?
I'm from the dog pound. The kid tied the dog's leash to the leg of Tony Vitucci's fruit stand while he played ball. Dog busted the leg off and smashed $12 worth of fruit. And besides, the dog's got no license. It's $15 the kid's got to cough up.
Oh, yeah? Well, you don't see no kid and no dog here, mister. Better keep hunting.
No need to get tough, kid. I'm just working.
No, then, Stevie, the man's right. But I think myself, mister, you'd be in better business hunting for somebody else.
But,
so good night to you.
I'll go. But I'll get that dog yet.
Stevie, do you think it was Timmy and Mike tipped over Tony's fruit stand?
Of course it was. He's always got to tie Mike to something because he chases the ball and won't give it up.
Oh, Lord love the foolish dog, but I'd hate for the dog catcher to be getting him. Oh, sure, and I wonder where they are.
Hey,
oh.
Hey, what's that, Mike? Where are they?
Hi. She gone?
Tim, hey, what are you doing hiding in the clothes closet?
In front of the dog catcher. Has he gone good?
Oh, glory be, hiding in the closet all the time.
Yes, boys, what can I do for you?
We want my dog, mister.
Wait a minute, Timmy. Look, mister, we come to spring the kid's mud hay. He's kind of medium big mud, black and white, and kind of half long, half short hair. You got it?
Oh, yeah. He was brought in about an hour ago. You got the money?
Yeah, here's the $3.
I'm sorry, son. It'll be a little more than that. You know, I told you that dog tipped over a fruit stand and the proprietors entered the claim for damages. That's $12 plus the license fee.
$15, eh? Oh, mister, me and the kid here couldn't make that much moolah together in a year.
Son, I'm sorry, but unless you pay a dog license fee and pay for that damage, my hands are tied. And you only have 48 hours, by the way.
Huh? We only got 48 hours? 2 days?
That's right.
Then what happens?
son, I might as well tell you. The dog is put away.
Yeah, kid. He gets the gas chamber.
Oh, no. You can't kill my Mike. He didn't do nothing.
Son, I'm sorry. It ain't me. It's the law.
Yeah, the law, hey. Come on, kid. Let's scram.
No. I want to see Mike first.
That you can, son. He's in the first cage, right through that door.
Hurry, Timmy. We got to get back to the newsstand.
Oh, my. Gee, Mike, what are we going to do? It ain't your fault. You didn't do anything. It's my fault. I shouldn't have tied you to the fruit stand, but I didn't mean to do nothing, Mike. Guy says if I don't get 15 bucks, they'll give you the chamber, but I'll get it, Mike. I'll spring you, honest, Mike. I'll get it somewhere.
This Wednesday night, June 7th at 10 o'clock on the air on Tune to Yesterday, an hour of adventure from the lives of Harry Lime with Orson Welles, then the Screen Director's Playhouse from 1950. Then it's an hour of Broadway with the Lux Radio Theater bringing us To the Ladies from 1940. Now, I'd like to address something really quickly when it comes to the Broadway genre that's scheduled on Tune to Yesterday. I've heard from some that they haven't given it a chance because it might be a musical. Well, out of the 50 or so Broadway hours that I've scheduled, only one happens to contain a lot of music. So give it a chance. It's basically great stage plays. This Thursday night at 10 o'clock, an hour of horror. You'll hear episodes of Inner Sanctum and the classic story, The Yellow Wallpaper, on suspense.
It's true, that's all they want. Jean laughs at me, of course, but one expects that in marriage. And he says I have foolish fancies and he sometimes can talk them away, but not this time. No matter what he says, it's a smoldering, sulfurous, unclean, it's hideous wallpaper. No wonder the children scratched at it and stripped it down. No wonder they gouged the plaster with their little fingernails. No wonder they hate it. I hate it myself. And somehow, I feel it hates me.
At 11 o'clock on Thursday, sci-fi from Dimension X and suspense from 1959. You can hear these programs Wednesday, June 7th and Thursday, June 8th from 10 to midnight, broadcast live on the air and streaming live at the same time at WRVO.org. This Saturday, June 10th, is the birthday of radio announcer Ernest Chappell, who at the peak of his career wasn't really announcing at all, rather acting in one of the more profound, at times strange, and certainly creative programs on the air called Quiet Please, where he starred in every broadcast, and the show was a real hit with critics and fans alike. Chappell was born in Syracuse in 1903, and one of his earlier gigs on the air was as a national announcer for the CBS program The Campbell Playhouse. That, since its inception as the Mercury Theater with Orson Welles, helped to innovate how radio drama was performed, in addition to producing the most famous show ever broadcast, The War of the Worlds. On The Campbell Show, Chappell's pitches for Chicken Soup had a smooth and honest quality, and was a good match among the talented cast who relied on that sort of honesty to sell the dramas that they were acting out. Here's some sound from his first moments on the show.
Here is my associate of long standing, Ernest Chappell, with an important message.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. The time was, and it was not so long ago, when chicken was a rare and special treat. What magic the words chicken for dinner conjured up in our young minds, and how we looked forward to these great events. With proud gusto, Father would dexterously separate wings and legs and then carve tender white slices from the breast, while each of us silently prayed to be granted his special favorite part. And then on the second day, there came another treat. The remaining meat and the carcass went into Mother's soup kettle to be simmered slowly, seasoned gently, and served forth as a suppertime delight. Today, if you have wistful memories of that glorious old home chicken soup, then Campbell's Chicken Soup is just made for you.
Before this, Chappell proved himself in the industry from his beginnings at Rochester Station, WABC, moving on to work in the Midwest, where, according to a profile piece in Iowa's Globe Gazette from 1943, that could have been his last stop if he hadn't been recommended as, quote, an outstanding announcer for the music show The Flying Red Horse Tavern. Again, heard nationally on CBS in the mid-30s. In the same article, it named Chappell as one of the busiest men in radio. And at the time, he was the host for the national quiz show Are You a Genius?, an announcer for radio's interview and game show Vox Pop, along with announcing for the Ellery Queen Mystery Show. And in the article, he said something that might seem a little strange today, but he said that he loved old-time radio. So in today's terms, really old-time radio from the 1920s and early 30s, when many programs went largely unscripted. And that would kind of support his candid-sounding style when he was on the air. The forum for this turned out to be the gripping and even surreal anthology show Quiet Please, which was on the air from 1947 through 1949. Willis Cooper was the creator and writer of the horror thrill show Lights Out before that, and after he tried his luck with the movies, he started to put together a new program, and by this time he had a disdain for traditional acting, and he turned his sights on a cast of very few who would play out his stories in a way that sounded more like a recollection of the tale while it was happening in real time. He picked Ernest Chappell, who was the leading man and narrator for every single show, that for the most part would put an everyday sort of man into a fantastic situation, like the episode Not Responsible After 30 Years, where Chappell's character was face to face with an unearthed skeleton centuries old who was wearing a modern watch, or the story of his unraveling while playing a politician who receives a phone call telling him to drop dead. Each week, really imaginative plays asked the listener to go a bit beyond what they were used to, but most who listened were glad they did. Although any show from the series is really top drawer, here's an excerpt from among the most famous from the show called The Thing on the Forble Board, a triumph of radio horror.
So, okay, I go up on the Forble Board. And you can bet I took a good gander around before I did anything else. Now I couldn't see a thing. So I signaled to the driller to let down the traveling block, and he did. Came sailing down from up above. I was just reaching for it to pick up the first Forble of drill pipe. Gave a big jerk and the cable broke. It dropped and nearly pulled me off the Forble Board. And it landed right on top of Ted. And if you have any idea what a guy looks like after 2 tons of metal land on him from 80 feet up, yeah, you keep your ideas to yourself. Well, that was enough. 2 accidents in a row. The whole crew quit. They wasn't going to wait for a third. And it was Ted's money that was paying off. There wasn't any more, and as far as I know, the abandoned derrick is still there. And that was 20 years ago. Oh, I forgot to tell you something. That traveling block was right in front of my face when it broke loose. It was hanging by steel cable, 3/4-inch steel cable. And I saw that cable break right before my eyes. It looked just like a piece of string when you snap it between your fingers. I could almost see the fingers. You know what? There was something up there on the Forble Board with me. And so a couple of days later, I came back. I don't know if there's anything in the world as desolate, as dismal, as dead-looking as an abandoned oil well rig. There it stands like a skeleton off on a deserted side road and the bare yellow hills surrounding it, and it's the deadest thing you ever saw. I sat in my car for a long time looking at it. Everything was just the way we'd left it. I looked into the floor. The smashed traveling block was there alongside the rotary table. There was a little mutter of steam from the boiler. That was all. Then I heard a tinkle of something as it hit the ground alongside me. I looked around. There wasn't a soul in sight. But at my feet was the gold ring that Billy Grunewald and I had found in the core of rock that came from a mile underground and from 1 million years ago in time. And I heard a little sound. The sound of a kid crying. And there wasn't any kid up there. And I heard it again, and it came from above my head, and I took out my revolver. I loaded it carefully. I started up the ladder to the Forble Board. Well, there wasn't anything up there, nothing I could see. But there was a voice crying. The voice of a little kid. And then there was a movement behind the rack of drill pipes, and I saw the pipe move, and I yelled, "Come out of there, whoever you are! Come out or I'll start shooting!" And the standard pipe shivered, and I thought, what can it be that can handle that heavy pipe like Jack Straw's? And then there was a crash. The whole stand-up pipe fell over, and I just got out of the way in time. And I was alone on the forward board with the thing. But I couldn't see it. I felt the platform tremble under my feet again as something moved toward me. I fired two or three shots. And nothing happened. I started backwards. I knew it was following me because I could hear it meowing like a cat. My feet tripped over something. I saw it was a big can of red lead that somebody had left up there. Without thinking, I picked it up and I threw it at the sound and it splashed. And there it was. And I wish...
It's Friday night on Tune to Yesterday at 10 o'clock. It's an hour of westerns. You'll hear episodes of The Frontier Gentleman and Straight Arrow. Then it's sitcoms by request for an hour to have them on late night. You'll hear The Great Gildersleeve and My Favorite Husband.
But I'll be darned if I'll march in another torchlight parade wearing George's pajamas.
You should talk. How do you think I feel wearing Rudolph's nightshirt?
Well, I'm through. Let them go alone.
Oh, gosh, Liz, do you think they would? After all, we've gone to every homecoming with them for the past 10 years.
Well, I went because I wasn't too sure some college babe wouldn't make a pass at George. But now he's gained enough weight and lost enough hair, so I don't have to worry.
This Saturday night, some interesting shows on Tune to Yesterday at 10. First, it's Memoirs of the Movies with a 1959 episode called Requiem for a Writer, then Strange as It Seems with stories from South America. In the 11 o'clock hour this Saturday night, True Detective Mysteries with the story The Rattlesnake and the Barefoot Bride, then Let George Do It from 1948. You can hear all these programs Friday and Saturday night from 10 to midnight, broadcast live on the air on Tune to Yesterday or live online at WRVO.org. Now, this week I'd like to toss out a question to the listeners of the TTY dialer, and I'm wondering if you listen just to Tune to Yesterday online when we repost the entire show in addition to the dialer podcast, or do you also listen to it on the air? I'm trying to figure out if I should be posting the podcasts of the entire 52-minute show online the day after it airs, just in case you missed it, or you can follow a bit better in the schedule for what is online as well. Let me know if you listen to the show on the air or exclusively online. Just email me, mark@wrvo.org. That's mark@wrvo.org. I hope you enjoy the dialer this week and listen to any or all of the shows coming up this next week on Tune to Yesterday. And until next Saturday, thanks for listening. I'll be back.